There's an adventure in every cup waiting for you at Expedition Roasters. Expedition Roasters is the artisanal roaster of specialty Disney and pop culture themed coffees. So why not brew some magic at your home? Some of our coffees include Skipper's Brew, Ghoulish Delight, Enchanted Tiki Coconut, Redhead Rum, and many other unique roasts. Our coffees are certified gluten and allergen-free and feature unique custom artwork by guest artists. So start your adventure today by visiting us online at expeditionroasters.com. And Disney Nerds podcast listeners, be sure to take advantage of this exclusive offer and save 20% on your first purchase with code DISNERD20. Brew your happy place. That's expeditionroasters.com.
Welcome to the splendor, the spectacle, the sparkling sensation, where the romance, the comedy, and the thrill of Disney fantasies come to electric life.
And as our friend Jiminy said, welcome. Welcome to the Disney Nerds Podcast, a place each week where like-minded people get together to discuss all things Disney. We'll help you get your Disney fix on. Here we go.
A Magic Kingdom proudly presents, in a million points of musical light, the Magic Worlds of Disney.
Hello and welcome to show number 252 of the Disney Nerds Podcast. Hey guys, how's it going? And welcome back to the show. On this week's show, we're going to bring you another episode of Listening to Walt with the Disney Nerds. We've actually talked about this from the very beginning when we created this show. The Disney Nerds podcast was going to be about all things Disney. Now, what we always want to remember was that everything was started by Walter Elias Disney. You know, you hear people talk about Walt Disney World, and you hear kids talk about the parks and the movies and all the different things the Disney company produces. A lot of times, I think we forget there actually was a gentleman out there named Walt Disney. So what we want to do is bring some of the things that Walt has said himself in various interviews or other ways that kind of give an idea of where he was coming from, what his world was like, and kind of like what the company was going through as it grew and grew and grew. For tonight, we kind of have a theme of awards. We're going to hear a couple different interviews and guest shots that Walt did on a couple different shows that kind of go over some of his achievements and the achievements of the company, along with giving us some insight on how animation works, how the animatronics work. And I think what's going to be a big treat also is for this show, I have Diane Disney with a short interview about Walt's apartment in Disneyland. Now, we all know about that. And basically, Walt had an apartment over the firehouse in Disneyland where he would spend a lot of time at the parks. Walt was there almost every day, and he would spend time in the apartment. He would walk out in the park and do things and such. Now, Walt Disney World, the plan had been to build him an apartment in Cinderella's Castle. Unfortunately, Walt passed away before Disney World was opened, and they did other things with that space. But listening to Diane talk about this kind of brings a really human factor to Walt. Was a grandfather, and he loved having his grandkids to the parks. And having this apartment made it so much easier to get a little privacy, get some time with the family, but then take them out into the parade or take them into the park. So we'll hear a little from Diane Disney. And then we're also going to finish up with some of the Oscar appearances Walt had made in the history of his Oscars achievement. Now, you'll hear once or twice how it's he holds the Guinness Book of World Records for the most Oscars. Well, here's a little taste of what the Oscar shows really like. You'll hear a couple times where the Oscars were awarded to Walt Disney, and you're going to hear one time where actually he was a presenter doing some awards, which I thought was really interesting too. I think you're really going to appreciate this version of Listening to Walt with the Disney Nerds. Let's start, and we're going to start with an interview that Walt did with this girl or reporter, Paula Stone. Again, I don't recognize the name, but she must have been big in her time. And this is kind of like one of those standard radio shows that was really cool. So without further ado, here you go. Listening to Walt with the Disney Nerds.
USA. Today, our broadcast called Movie Making takes us to the Walt Disney Studio to visit with the famous Walt Disney himself. Come on, let's hurry. There's Walt Disney himself standing in the doorway of his office.
Hello,
hi.
Paula, how are you?
Oh, I'm fine. Oh, don't tell me I'm late.
No. But I thought maybe I could take you along here and show you some of the work that we're doing on Cinderella and Alice in Wonderland. You know, we're rolling at top speed on these pictures right now.
Oh, I'd love to. But first, before we start, won't you tell our listeners about some of these awards here in the cabinet? You know, I've never seen so many medals and golden Oscars. Which was the first, Mr. Disney?
Well, this one right here. This is a special award presented in 1932 for the creation of Mickey Mouse.
I see. Bless his little heart. And what are all of those medals in the cases?
Well, there's several here from the Parents Magazine and a few from Look, and these others are from France, and here's some from Italy and South America and so forth.
Uh-huh. And that one over there, that's...
you mean the big sign?
Yes.
Well, that was from Russia.
Oh!
Good many years ago, though.
I understand they don't love you as much anymore.
No.
Mr. Disney, is there any award you've received among these many that is the most treasured?
Well, it's really hard to say. You know, each award has been important to us, and we've been highly appreciative of all of them. But I think the winning of the Thalberg Award is the most coveted honor.
Oh, yes. That's it right there. And let me see. The plaque reads, "For the most consistent high quality of production achievement." Oh, my, that is wonderful. Certainly a great honor to bestow on any producer. But I'd like to say I know of no producer who's given more joy to the whole world than you have with your wonderful pictures.
Well, thanks, Paula. It's nice to hear that. By the way, I might mention in connection to that Thalberg Award, you know, there's a little kiss from Norma Shearer that goes with it. At least it did when I got it.
Oh,
I don't know why.
I think
that has anything to do with my liking it the most.
You got a double award, huh?
But it is a really a great award. And for our work, I think we have a harder time doing a cartoon feature than you would with real actors. I think it's a more difficult job.
Uh-huh. And now the latest is Cinderella, is that right?
No. Cinderella and Alice in Wonderland are the latest in production.
Oh, I see.
But we've just finished one called Ichabod and Mr. Toad. And I feel this picture has many qualities that will appeal to moviegoers of all ages. Would you like to see some of the drawings on Cinderella? And
oh,
then we can
yes.
talk about Ichabod on the way.
Who plays Ichabod and who plays Mr. Toad in the story? I mean, who are the voices?
Well, Bing Crosby does Ichabod, and when I say he does it, I mean he really does it. He
uh-huh.
tells it, and he plays Ichabod, he plays Brom Bones, and
oh, that's
every
terrific.
Part except Katrina, you see. And
uh-huh.
Basil Rathbone narrates Mr. Toad.
Oh, that's delightful. And does Bing Crosby sing?
Oh, yes, he does. He sings three songs. The theme song, Ichabod, and the ballad, Katrina, and then a very scary number called The Headless Horseman.
Mm.
And it's, when Bing sings this number, it's going to be Halloween every time he does.
That's cute. Very spooky, huh? Bing Crosby combined with a Walt Disney character. Now, there's an unbeatable combination. You certainly are busy with production going at top speed. Ichabod and Mr. Toad finished, and Cinderella and Alice in Wonderland and animation, and now I hear you're leaving for England to do Treasure Island.
That's true, Paula. We're pretty excited about this picture. For one thing, it's our first totally live-action feature.
And absolutely no animation in the picture at all?
That's right. Well, for one thing, I just want to prove to my artists I can do something without them.
That's cute. And
then, of course, Treasure Island, to me, is one of the world's greatest stories, and I feel it should be done in live-action.
Yes.
Of course, it'll be filmed in Technicolor.
And right over in England,
that's
all
right,
of it.
Right in the locale of the story.
Oh, that's marvelous. In my mind's eye, I can see a giant theater marquee. Walt Disney presents Ichabod and Mr. Toad, Cinderella, Alice in Wonderland, and Treasure Island. Oh, what a treasure of pictures for the movie fans.
You don't mean all on one bill.
No, only in my mind's eye.
Well, Paula, I'd like to show your listeners something that few people ever see. I'd like to take them through the various rooms of the artists and the animators and try to show just how pictures like Cinderella and Alice in Wonderland come to life on the screen.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
You step right through this door.
Oh, yes. And while we pause on the threshold of this wonderful treat, let's hear a word from the announcer. This is Paula Stone again, speaking to you from the Walt Disney Studios, where Mr. Disney himself is taking us on a personally conducted tour of the animation building. And, oh, Mr. Disney, this room is breathtaking. The walls are lined with beautiful pictures in glowing colors. Oh, this is amazing.
Well, what you're looking at, Paula, is a cartoon script.
Is that so?
That's right. You see, it's a sort of a pictorial scenario.
Uh-huh.
And each one of those little pictures is a particular development in the progress of a story like Cinderella.
And this is Cinderella.
This is Cinderella. You see, all of these little things are sketched up. They're placed on this board and into this storyline. And, of course, these are only part of the drawings that go in the making of it. Before we get through the picture, there'll be at least 250,000 drawings. From this point, it moves down to the top animators.
Yes.
And they do all the key drawings, and then they have assistants who fill in the secondary things.
I see. Then each animator, you might say, has a crew.
Oh, yes. The top animator will have at least 10 assistants, and they'll work. Each one works on a certain sequence. Then later on, scores of girls come in. We call them inkers and painters because they ink and paint the drawings.
I see,
and they complete the process.
Uh-huh.
They transfer the from the pencil drawings of the artist, they transfer it onto these celluloids. Then these celluloids later on are placed under the camera with the background underneath them and photographed by the camera.
Oh.
And you know, we use as high as 2,000 different colors in making our pictures.
Oh, that's amazing. But to go back to the beginning, just how do you start a cartoon, Mr. Disney? I mean, what are the very first essentials before you reach the point that we're seeing here today?
Well, the very first essential is a good story.
Well, naturally.
Then, as I've shown you here, we develop it in this sort of a comic strip scenario form.
Yes.
Then we get into story conferences, and everybody tears it apart, and we throw stuff out and put new stuff in and rebuild and, and add and all of that until finally we get a story that we feel is right. Then it goes into the process that I was describing of the animators beginning to create the models and set up the characters. You see, we have to sort of cast with a piece of pencil.
And how do you cast?
A piece of paper and a pencil.
And
find the right character to be used.
And you have sheets of that...
Out of that comes a model sheet.
Oh, that's how it's done.
That's how all the artists keep the characters looking alike.
Oh, I see.
I should be able to tell. It's better after all the years of it.
Well, it's one thing to create it and draw it and build this, and it's another thing to tell it.
Well, you see that little fat mouse over there in that picture?
Oh, yes. Well, there are a lot of mice around Cinderella in the picture, but... I see what you mean. The little fat one there. Yeah.
Gus. We call him Gus.
Gus, uh-huh.
This is a very amusing sequence, I hope, in the film where that the other mice are trying to tell Gus what a cat is.
Oh, yes,
You see, Gus has been a rather sheltered mouse all his life, and they're briefing him on just what he should do, heaven forbid, if a cat should come into his life.
Oh, what a wonderful idea. By the way, Mr. Disney, are there songs in Cinderella? You always have such wonderful scores in all of your pictures.
Oh, yes, we've got many songs in Cinderella.
Uh-huh.
In fact, right over here, Paula, is a little series of pictures describing one of the songs.
Oh, yes.
See, this depicts this musical sequence here. Cinderella is singing to her friends, and her friends are the mice and the birds.
Yes.
She's trying to describe to them the way she feels about all the work she has to do and the way her sisters treat her.
Yes.
And, the lyric of the song is that if she says how wonderful it would be if I could live in a land of fantasy with seven Cinderellas all working for me.
Seven Cinderellas.
That's right. And then that goes into a dream sequence.
Uh-huh.
In which she's all these seven Cinderellas, she feels that she's the grand lady with these seven Cinderellas all doing all the housework.
Oh, how delightful. And those drawings there, they all have words under the
Well, that's the lyric of the song.
Uh-huh.
You see, under each
picture
as it's supposed to be played on the screen in the sequence.
Oh, yes.
And that way, we can all follow the progress of the song, and the artists then know just what their drawings are doing and everything, you know.
Oh, it sounds very complicated, but very wonderful. And now, what about the camera that photographs these pictures?
Well, we had to develop a camera. We developed a special camera here called the monoplane camera.
Uh-huh.
That's because it uses many planes. And we have, I think, up as high as seven levels. It gives a sort of a third dimension in the drawings.
I see.
Anyways, I mean, would you like to go through the camera building and see the camera?
Well, I would love it, and it breaks my heart to say I haven't time, but that's the size of it. You see, we have just so many minutes of broadcast time, and now I'm afraid my time is almost up.
Well, it's really a shame, but I'll give you a rain check.
I'll just keep that rain check as a souvenir. And now I'm afraid I must head for my car. Thank you again so much for a thrilling visit. And now, folks, this is Paula Stone saying so long, friends.
So to give you an idea, that interview took place in 1949, to place kind of where that is on the time scale. Okay, now the next clip I have is from the Jack Benny Show, which was a very famous show back in the day, I understand. Now, the way it appears the show was set up was that Jack Benny would do a show in front of an audience, but then he would also film clips of guest stars as almost like a sitcom, where he would be at different places. So what you're going to hear is Jack Benny introducing a bit, but then it flips over to Walt's office at the studios. So here you go. Jack Benny, take it away.
Walt Disney.
Well, I like him, but let's don't forget that darn cat. The title of the picture is the important thing. We got to punch it. Yeah?
Mr. Jack Benny is here to see you.
Jack Benny? Send him in. Wonder what he wants.
Well, I thought he was still mad at you for not using him in Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
I finally got through to him. It was a cartoon. Oh, Jack.
Hi, Walt.
Good to see you. Good
Thank
see
you. You. Thank you.
This is a real pleasant surprise, you know? You don't come around here very often.
No, what a beautiful studio you have here, this office and everything.
Well, I think after Mary Poppins, I can afford a redo.
Sit down. Esmeralda, be quiet.
Okay, Walt.
Everybody around here calls me Walt.
I know.
Jack, what's on your mind?
Well, Walt, you see, tomorrow I'm doing an hour television show with a large cast and crew, and I thought that instead of taking him to dinner after the show at the Bistro or Chasen's, that just for a change, I thought it'd be kind of nice if I took him through Disneyland. That is, if it's all right with you.
Oh, Jack, I think it's a wonderful idea. How many people are there?
110. That's not too many, is it?
No. In fact, we have a special department that handles large groups at a discount.
A discount?
Yeah, that means...
I know what it means! Look, Walt, I was thinking, you know, with a big show like mine, I wind up with practically nothing. 110 people, I mean, even with a discount. It would really run into... And since you... You see, the fact that you own the place. I thought, maybe.
Come on in, Chang, behave yourself. Well, Jack, pay no attention to him. We're all one big happy family. Whatever you can say to me, you can say in front of him.
As I was saying...
One big family.
Shut up. Now, Walt, as I was saying... Nice pussycat. Walt, as I was saying, you see, 110... Oh, incidentally, did you ever get those four complimentary tickets I sent you to one of my television shows?
Oh, yes, Jack, thank you. You know, I almost forgotten that was about 9 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, just about, yeah. Now, I was saying, I'm taking 110 people to Disneyland. Oh, Walt, I must tell you, I think it's just so wonderful the way you're always taking groups of poor, underprivileged children through Disneyland free of charge.
Well, Jack, we don't publicize that. How did you know?
My sister's kid went once. A wonderful time, you know. He brought me back some candy and everything. Now, Walt, it's silly to keep beating around the bush. What I was wondering was...
Wait a minute, Jack. I think I'm getting the idea. You want 110 free tickets?
Well,
I had no idea that's what you wanted.
I didn't. I'm only a bird.
Sorry. Let's see here. Wait a minute, Jack. I seem to recall that when Disneyland first opened, I gave you a 14-carat solid gold pass, lifetime pass to Disneyland.
Yes, you did give me a solid gold pass.
Well, where is it?
Here. I had another box.
Okay, 110 free tickets. And I hope you all have a wonderful time.
Yeah. Thanks, thanks, Walt. And listen, you've been so nice to me, I'm going to do something for you.
Yeah, what's that?
Well, you know how important it is when a motion picture is publicized on a television show.
Oh, yes, I certainly do.
Well, now look, at on my show tomorrow night, I have a beautiful foreign actress. And we're going to do a foreign film, you know, like they do in Italy, an Italian film. See?
Yeah.
And I'm going to rewrite the whole thing so that it has a sort of a Walt Disney approach.
But, Jack, I don't know how you can possibly apply my movie-making approach to a foreign film. I mean, everyone I see seems to be so earthy, so full of basic, raw emotions.
That's true, Walt, but don't worry about it. It'll work out.
But there's such short time. Won't it be a problem?
Not when you're as creative as I am.
He's living in the wonderful world of Benny.
Don't worry about a thing. It'll be great. And thanks so much for the tickets.
Always glad to help a friend in need, Jack. Goodbye.
I was just thinking. Now, see, my wife, Mary, she's not on my show, but she's never been to Disneyland. And I was just thinking.
My approach in an Italian movie? This we'll have to see, won't we?
That would be funny to see. Now, if I remember from the clip, it was Elke Sommer, a very young Elke Sommer, being the actress, the foreign actress that Jack Benny was talking to in the next segment. Okay, so the next one we have is an interview from the CBC. Now, that would be the Canadian Broadcasting Company, where they did a series of interviews with Walt Disney. And I got to say, it's about 1950, 1951, these interviews took place. So we have two of them together. And you're going to hear a little bit about animatronics, a little bit about animation, and a little bit about some upcoming movies. So, here we go.
And today, the newest and most astonishing attraction at Disneyland is called, and I hope my tongue doesn't trip over it, Audio Animatronics.
Yes, Audio Animatronic Figures. It's another door that's open for us. You see, our whole 40-some-odd years here has been in the world of making things move, inanimate things move. Yeah? From a drawing through all kinds of any little props and things. Now we're making these human figures, dimensional human figures move, make animals move, make anything move, through the use of electronics. It's a tape mechanism that the tape, it's like a programming or sequencing when they do a missile, when they're sending some missile to the moon, say. Yeah. At different stages, at different times, things must happen. That's all programmed, predetermined. So our show is put on that tape, and it's programmed from this tape. And we run it off a little one-inch tape that has 14 tracks. And on each track, we can get up to 16 signals. Now, those little signals go and impulse this figure and make the figure move, make the figure talk, and everything. Well, look, I could show it to you a lot better than I can tell you about it. We come over here and I'll give you a little preview.
I should say.
This is a little audio animatronic setup for the parter kit, so to speak. Now, these are not working from tape. These are manually controlled. This little gizmo here, kind of like a joystick on the old type airplanes, is what gives us a chance to program the bird. And as we work this and get all the little movements that we want in the bird out, we record it on the tape, and then from then on, the tape will do everything that we've done here. Sit down, we'll have a little go at this thing. Now, this is not part of our Disneyland show. I mean, you know, the tiki room. This is a little robin that we had in Mary Poppins. And this little bird sang a duet with Julie Andrews. Maybe we can get a little response from it. Hello there, kid. What can you do for us, huh? Can you sing, whistle, anything? Now, this is one of the characters from the Tiki Room. He's actually a substitute. In other words, if one of our master ceremonies, we have four macaws who act as master ceremonies in the Tiki Bird Room at Disneyland, and they actually keep the show rolling. And along with them are other birds who sing and things, and flowers that sing, and then the tiki images, you know, the carved tiki poles and things with these tiki gods. They sing and they drum, and we have quite a show. But this is the boy that takes care of it. In other words, he's the stand-in for one of them, you know?
He's very alert.
Throw out your chest, show him how big you are. That's it. Now, this is Fletcher Markle of CBC.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name.
Markle.
How do you spell that, sir?
M-A-R-K-L-E.
M-A-R-K Markle.
That's right.
How do you do, sir?
How do you do? Whatever your name is.
What is my name?
Well, I'll tell you the truth, we haven't given them a name yet. How would you like, Jose?
Ah, muchas gracias. This gives me an accent.
How do you do, Jose? Now it's official.
How do you do? Oh, miss my accent.
Well, that's just a little demonstration of audio animatronic figures.
Now, let me make sure I understand what happens. In controlling these birds by these extraordinary instruments, you can at the same time record their movements on a tape?
That's right. After we get it programmed, it's like rehearsing a show. And you go through it and rehearse it and rehearse it, and you finally say, that's it. And we say, all right, let's go for a take. And as we go for a take, all the things we do here are recorded. And then when we play the tape back, he will do everything he's doing here. Only it's all part of a programmed show, you see?
And I understand then that the next step beyond the birds has been to do the same kind of programming with human beings.
Yes, with human beings, yeah. I'm not going to replace the human being. It's just for show purposes, because you take Disneyland down there. We operate 15 hours a day, and these shows have got to go on the hour. Now, the Tiki Bird Show goes on three times an hour, and I don't have to stop for coffee breaks and all that kind of stuff, you see? So that's the whole idea of it. It's just another dimension in the animation that we've been doing all our life. You see?
It's absolutely,
now we're going into dimensional things and everything. It's a new door, it's a new toy for us, and we're having a lot of fun, and we hope we can really do some exciting things in the future.
May I try one here?
Yes, you go right ahead. How about a song then? What about you, Jose? You got anything to say?
Hasta la vista.
That's right, hasta la vista. Well, let's go over and finish our tea.
Right. How long was Snow White in production, Walt?
I actually started to plan the picture about 1935, and I fooled around with it, trying to get a hold of a story and things for a couple of years, and finally it began to gel. Then I went to work on it, and I finished it the fall of 1938. And I didn't know what I had or what would happen or anything. We had the family fortune. We had everything wrapped up in Snow White. In fact, the banker, I think, was losing more sleep than I was. And fortunately, we put it in, premiered it, and everything else. Why, everything was fine. The banker was happy.
And the following spring, along came that Academy Award.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't but about 2 years later that I was almost broke.
Well, 2 years later was following Pinocchio and coming into the Fantasia period.
Yeah, that about did it, you know.
But that was a
artistic
new
artistic success, financial failure, you know.
Certainly an artistic success. It was a magnificent
Some people would question that, too.
Mickey was certainly a mouse of all trades, and particularly impressive as a conductor.
Well, that's what started. I was doing this Sorcerer's Apprentice with Mickey Mouse, and I happened to have dinner one night with Stokowski. And Stokowski said, I would love to conduct that for you, you know? Well, that led to not only doing this one little short subject, but it got us involved where I did all of Fantasia, and before I knew it, I ended up spending $400,000 getting music with Stokowski.
Well, perfectionism always costs money, I guess. That's something you've always been after.
Well, I was always known as the perfectionist until I met Stokowski.
And you had a new member of the club, indeed. Yeah. Tell us, Walt, what are the principal technical advances in the animated cartoon since the time of Fantasia?
Better drawing. The first thing I did when I got a little money to experiment, I put all my artists back in school. We art schools that existed then didn't quite have enough for what we needed. So we set up our own art school.
Well, you were inventing a new art anyway.
Well, yes, but we were just going a little bit beyond what they were getting in the art school, where they work with the static figure. Now, we were dealing in motion, movement, and the flow of movement, the flow of things, you know, action, reaction, all of that. So we had to set up our own school. And out of that school have come the artists that now make up my staff here, and more than that, the artists that make up most all of the cartoon outfits in Hollywood, where directly or indirectly out of my school.
Did you note that little dig Walt made there about companies or other cartoon companies taking artists away from him after they were trained at his school? Well, that's a story for another time. So what we have next are a couple of recordings of Oscar award ceremonies where Walt Disney is receiving awards, and there's actually a clip here also where Walt is giving awards. It's pretty cool. He's giving musical awards, and it's really cool listening to Walt try to get those names out.
Two new stars in Hollywood's galaxy will present the awards for Short Substance. The movie version of Ida and Eddie Cantor. That's Marilyn Erskine and Keith Purcell.
The nominations for the best achievement in cartoon short subjects are
Christopher Crumpet, United Productions of America, Columbia, Stephen Basusto, producer.
From A to ZZZZ, Warner Brothers Cartoons, Edward Seltzer, producer.
Rugged Bear, Walt Disney, RKO Radio, Walt Disney, producer.
The Telltale Heart, United Productions of America, Columbia, Stephen Basusto, producer.
Toot, Whistle, Plunk, and Boom, Walt Disney, Buena Vista Film Distributors, Walt Disney, producer. And the winner, please. The winner is Toot, Whistle, Plunk, and Boom, Walt Disney Productions.
Well, I just want to say on behalf of my staff, and especially the naturalist photographers who have played such a great part in making the nature films, many, many thanks.
Those nominated for achievement in two real short subjects are
Bear Country, Walt Disney RKO Radio, Walt Disney Producer.
Ben and Me, Walt Disney, Buena Vista Film Distributors, Walt Disney Producer.
Return to Glenescull, Dublin Gate Theater Production, Arthur Mayer, Edward Kingsley.
Vesuvius Express, 20th Century Fox, Otto Lang Producer.
Winter Paradise, Warner Brothers, Cedric Francis, producer.
And the winner is?
Bear Country, Walt Disney Productions, Walt Disney Producers.
I just got to say one more word. It's wonderful, but I think this is my year to retire.
Wonderful. That's a pretty great man.
The next category is special effects. My award for the finest achievement in special effects would go to Gina Lola Brigida. However, the official Academy Award will be presented by that fine actor, Lee J. Cobb.
The special effects gentlemen are those wizards of optical illusion who can produce a tornado, an earthquake, for the end of the world, all on a quiet afternoon in Burbank. Mr. Miller? The winner is 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Walt Disney Studios.
Ladies and gentlemen, Walt Disney received the award from Walt Disney Studios.
This is a group effort. This is a group effort. Many men play a part in doing, creating these effects. And it is for them that I accept this award. Thank you.
I wondered why I drove up in that truck.
Are for documentary films. To present them, one of Hollywood's most beautiful actresses, Miss Grace Kelly.
The documentary feature. The winner is The Vanishing Prairie, Walt Disney.
On behalf of all the people who play such an important part in bringing these to the screen, I thank you very much.
You know, when we called Walt Disney and asked him to present the music awards tonight, he said, we said, Walt, with all the songs you've commissioned for your pictures and what with Fantasia and all, you'd be the right man to do it. After all, think how much you've done for music in Hollywood. And his warm reply was, I would have thought it was the other way around. In any case, Walt fought his way through all the Oscars in his living room to our stage tonight. One of the great theatrical inventors of modern times, Mr. Walt Disney, right here.
Those nominated for the best music score of a dramatic or comedy picture are High Noon, Kramer, United Artists, Dmitri Tiomkin, Ivanhoe MGM, Nicholas Roska, Miracle Fatima Warners, Max Steiner, The Thief, Popkin, United Artists, Herschel Burke Gilbert, Viva Zapata, 20th Century Fox, Alex North. And the winner is Dmitri Tiomkin for High Noon.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Those nominated for the best scoring of a musical picture are Hans Christian Andersen, Goldwyn RKO, Walter Schrarf, the jazz singer Warners, Ray Heindorf and Max Steiner, the medium Transfilm, Lopert, Italian, Gino Carlo Manati, Singing in the Rain, MGM, Lenny Hayden, with A Song in My Heart, 20th Century Fox, Alfred Newman. The winner is Alfred Newman for With A Song in My Heart.
Thank you very much.
Say, Walt, before you go any further, let me explain something here. You know, you've seen these, I know I'd like to clear up just one little point. Perhaps you've wondered, ladies and gentlemen, why, if the results are so secret, the orchestra always manages to play the appropriate piece of music the very second the winner is announced. Well, it's very simple. For each award, our musicians have five different sheets of music fanned out in front of them. The moment the winner's name is mentioned, they pull out the right sheet. In that split second, the conductor gives the downbeat, and away they go. Sounds a little frantic. Well, it is. We'll give you a chance to see it work on this next award. Walter, it's yours.
Those nominated for the best song are I Am in Love, from Son of Paleface, Paramount, music and lyrics, Jack Brook. Because You're Mine, from the picture of the same name, MGM, music, Nicholas Brodsky, lyrics, Sammy Kahn. High Noon, Don't Forsake Me, My Darling. High Noon, Kramer, United Artists. Music by Dimitri Tiomkin, Ned Washington. Thumbelina from Hans Christian Andersen, Goldwyn RKO. Music and lyrics, Frank Loesser. Zing a Little Song from Paramount. Music, Harry Warren. Lyrics, Leo Robin. The winner is Dimitri Tiomkin and Ned Washington for Not Forsake Me, My Darling.
Thank you, every one of you, very much.
I feel like a mother of the wonderful twins.
So, I'm not sure if you caught this, but in the first Oscar clip, it was Walt winning the Oscar as producer for Toot, Whistle, Plunk, and Boom. Now, that was that short that was really cool, talking about how music was invented by the cavemen, and you had some great sound effects, and I actually remember seeing this in school, in music class. Well, he won the award for it. He walked up, and then he thanked the naturalist photographers who bring all that good stuff to us. So the next award he got, which was right after that, was for the Bears movie, which was literally the naturalist type of movie. So I'm not sure if he just knew he was going to get those awards ahead of time and mixed up speeches or what happened, but it's kind of cool hearing that. The next clip was the one I promised. This was the cool one that we had with Diane Disney, Walt's daughter, talking about the suite that they had at Disneyland over the firehouse. Diane describes it incredibly well, and you know what? There's a lot of things that she mentions in this interview I did not know before. I consider this clip probably one of the prizes of tonight's collection in that we really do hear about Walt Disney, not about the company, not about how well Mickey Mouse was doing, but really just about Walt the family man. And I tell you what, we really do not hear enough about that. So here we go, Diane Disney talking about her dad.
Not everybody may know that my father had a little apartment. My parents spent much time at it. It was right over the firehouse on Main Street in Disneyland. Disneyland was being built while Dad was in the middle of a production on Lady and the Tramp. He'd spend the morning in the studio, then out in Anaheim in the afternoons and back. It's a long drive. I think he always envisioned he'd have to be there, and he'd want to be there. Mother and Dad loved the Victorian period. It was the period that they grew up in, but our home was not of that style. This was their little Victorian masterpiece. Emile Curry, very talented set decorator, decorated the apartment with things that they had and things that he also found. He won an Academy Award for the sets of 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, Mary Poppins, Pollyanna, all the films, that part of my father's life and beyond. When Dad would travel, they'd go into little antique shops, and that's where he acquired some of his miniature collection and bric-a-brac, you know, little china teacups and things. Mother collected cranberry glass, and the cranberry is the color that dominates this apartment. It was this little microcosm of the Victorian world in cranberry red. It was gorgeous. Dad was always fascinated with things that worked. Mechanical toys, music boxes, that sort of thing. Near the front door, as you walked in, you'd see this beautiful Edison phonograph with a beautiful green morning glory shaped horn. Actually, it had morning glories painted around it. And it had the little wax cylinders. So we had music up there, nostalgic music. On the other side of the apartment is this beautiful music box made by the Regina Music Box Company in the late 19th century. It had this large metal disc with little notches in it that played all kinds of tunes. It was really quite wonderful to watch, sort of a calliope-like tone. Those were his personal purchases. What surprised me when we went back into the apartment sometime after Dad's death was that everything in that little tiny kitchenette area was there. In the cupboards were little baby bottles from the time my children were infants. Dad loved grilled cheese sandwiches, and so there was a sandwich grill there. And also, he was very content with a meal of just a can of chili, Gebhardt's and Hormel, which he would mix, not very fancy. Emil Curry designed a little terrace out on the roof, wicker furniture, beautiful colors, and they would arrange little buffet lunches for family there, and then we'd sit out on the ledge above the firehouse and watch the parade. A few days before Disneyland opened, my parents celebrated their 30th wedding anniversary in the park. Everybody went into the Golden Horseshoe Saloon, and just as we were sitting down to dinner, Mother came to me and said, "Where's Walt? I can't find him." I look up and I spy Dad. He's up in a balcony just over the stage, and the Golden Horseshoe review has started. And at the end, the Pecos Bill thing, yippee-yay, yippee-yay-o. Dad is up in the balcony and he starts going bang, bang. And he started to climb over the side of the balcony, get down on the, and then when he got to the stage, he just stood there and beamed. And someone yelled, "Get Lily up there." So Mother goes up on the stage. Then everybody came up on stage and started dancing, and Dad was just wandering around, so happy. It was very sweet. Because the apartment was above the firehouse, it had a pole to slide down from the sleeping quarters to the engines. The pole went right up through the apartment floor to the ceiling, and Dad's looking out the window and he saw Bess Parker and Buddy Ebsen starting up Main Street, and he called out to them and told them how to get up to the apartment, and Dad showed them the fire pole and suggested that they slide down it. And like good sports, they both did. When Mother and Dad would spend their weekends there, Dad had this little routine. He'd get dressed and walk the park before anybody else was there. They were still sweeping the streets and watering it down, and he'd have breakfast at Aunt Jemima's Pancake House. It was his neighborhood. My dad would call me from his office sometimes and ask if they could take the kids down to Disneyland for the weekend. My children often spent the weekend down there. They really loved it. And he loved being a grandfather. The couches are beds, and underneath them were pull-out trundle beds. And they all slept there, little girls all over the floor, and Mother and Dad. Ron and I spent a couple of nights out there with our children. And just out on the other side of it was the Jungle Ride. And they didn't turn off the soundtrack for the Jungle Ride. So all night you would hear the gunshot, you know, that was all part of the soundtrack. The kids kind of enjoyed it, but we didn't. From the time Disneyland existed, the annual opening of the Christmas parade was really the highlight of our Christmases. Dad would always lead the parade in some vehicle. And when my children were old enough to go with him, he was so thrilled. But they weren't. They were terrified. My daughter Joanna, when he first rode with her, as he came by where we were in the stands, he looked at us and he went like that. She was hiding on the floor of the little vehicle. When we conceived of our museum, I very much wanted to represent the apartment there because it was such a part of their lives. It's the purpose of the museum, for people to know who he was and what he liked to do. And this was something that was very dear to both of my parents. The window you see behind me here is an exact replica of the window he would stand and look out at the main square. And he could watch the Disneyland parade at the end of the day. And he always got very emotional when he saw them lower the flag in his Disneyland. I love the fact that Disneyland has kept this apartment the way it is. That lamp is always lit in that window over the firehouse, sort of as a symbol. But Dad's spirit is still present in Disneyland.
As I said, that was probably the best interview of the night. The end part, as far as Walt having a special moment when the flag lowering every day at the park, that just means so much because I tell you what, whenever we're there for that time of the day, we make it a point to see that and feel the same way totally. Okay, guys. Well, I tell you what, that's it for tonight. I hope bringing you some of the words from Walt's mouth directly and Diane's gave you kind of a glimpse of what kind of guy he was. Now, of course, the interviews in the beginning were more made up and more scripted. However, just at the Oscars a little bit, and you hear him kind of like, you know, off the cuff things, you kind of get a little bit of a feeling of what the man might have been like. And again, Diane Disney's interview was, like I said, pretty incredible because it is basically true. It sounded really great. If you want to get in touch with the show, please send us an email. Don't forget, we're still collecting your memories of our 5 years being on the air as a podcast, the Disney Nerds podcast. We will have our 5th year anniversary show coming up in September. And we're asking all our listeners that if you've listened to us for a little while or from the very beginning, if you can email us. Send us an email and let us know either in written form, audio form, or even video form what you thought about the show, how you found us, what you like the best, anything you want to say, basically. We want to include that as a segment on that anniversary show. We're going to have Jimmy jump in and tell you how to get in touch with us. Jimmy?
You can email us at questions at thedisneynerdspodcast.com and email us individually at ed@thedisneynerdspodcast.com, jimmy@thedisneynerdspodcast.com, etc. You can send us a message on Facebook to the page, The Disney Nerds Podcast. Join our group, Disney Nerds, Instagram at The Disney Nerds Podcast, and Twitter at The Disney Nerds. Make sure to check out the website, www.thedisneynerdspodcast.com, and watch the live stream every Tuesday night at 9 o'clock Walt Disney World time.
Okay, guys. So that's it for show number 252. From the entire cast of the Disney Nerds podcast, this is Ed. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
If you would like to join our jamboree, there's a simple rule that's compulsory.